Erev Tov, of course, we dedicate the shiur this evening to the 73 Jewish boys that lost their lives in a terrible tragedy last night. And what is there to say more than has been already said? We're going to learn Torah in their memory. It's a profound tragedy. It's a tragedy that how can parents get over sometimes? It's a terrible tragedy. All right. The parasha is Parashat HaMishpatim. Ve'ela HaMishpatim asher tasim lifneihem. These are the judgments that you should place before them. Would seem to indicate that this is where Torah legislation begins. And of all things, what does Torah legislation begin with? It begins with Ki tikne eved ivri. If you purchase a Hebrew slave, sheishanim yavod, 6 years he should work for you. Uvashviyis yetze lachavshi chinam, and in the seventh year he goes out free, chinam, without necessity to pay. I mean, obviously, one of the problems that we're going to have to deal with over here is, it seems as though this is the beginning of legislation. Moshe Rabbeinu is teaching Torah. God tells him, Eile HaMishpatim, these are the laws, asher tasim lifneihem, that you should place before them. I think we would have been hard-pressed to come up with a halacha that is more irrelevant and inconsequential to Klal Yisrael in the Midbar than this one. This is the way Jewish legislation begins. Slaves. What to do with slaves? First of all, from the point of view of halacha, it will not even be relevant until after they have gone through the Midbar, conquered Eretz Yisrael, given out the land to various tribes. It certainly is not relevant to the Jew who's in the Midbar right now. It seems as though it says nothing to them. I think maybe what we should also do is when we translate the word Eved in this parasha, I'm ready to use the word servant rather than the word slave. Because the moment that you use the word slave, it conjures up all sorts of images for us. Uncle Tom, Simon Legree. Somebody tells me that the New York Times supplement to the Jerusalem Post this week, the New York Times News of the Week in Review, had a picture of a 12-year-old girl who was a slave someplace in Africa. There are countries all over this world at the end of the 20th century where slavery is thriving. Any relationship between what the Torah is talking about and what the Torah is talking about 3,500 years ago and slavery as it exists in the age of the internet, I wouldn't be a bit surprised that slave traders are going to get themselves a website on the internet. Slavery is alive and well. Torah never meant that. First of all, famous Gemara says, Kol Hakone, Eved, whoever purchases a slave, Kono Adon La'atzmo, has purchased a master for himself. Because the halacha says, what happens if there's one pillow in the house? Who gets the pillow? The master or the Eved? So the halacha is, the Eved gets it. Can you imagine that kind of halacha by any other people? And this is, of course, the halacha was given to Klal Yisrael at a time that others were. What was it that Disraeli said? Their ancestors were swinging around on trees in loincloths, and the legislation was being given to the Jewish people from Sinai. So there's no relationship whatsoever between slavery and the parasha of Eved in Torah. And even if we're talking about a non-Jew who is purchased as a servant, and there also I'm going to use the translation servant, even when you purchase a non-Jew as a servant, has nothing to do with slavery, though the halacha is that he remains a servant forever. The Jewish servant is the one who works the 6 years and goes out in the seventh. The non-Jewish servant remains in servitude forever. Even there has no relationship whatsoever to slavery. Because remember, the slave trade as we know it, you purchase somebody against their will. They're standing up there, you understand? You check their teeth and you see if you want to buy them, and you buy them from their master. This was never true by Klal Yisrael. A person had to sell himself. And when a non-Jew sells himself, do you understand that he has to go through the process of geulos? He has to go through the process of conversion. Becoming a servant, a non-Jew becoming a servant in a Jewish home, is making a theological statement. This is never done by coercion. You can never coerce anybody. An Eved Knani, a non-Jewish servant, is chayiv in mitzvahs. Keisha has the same mitzvahs that a woman has. Now don't take it personally. It's not that women are servants or servants are women. That's not what it means. It means that mitzvos are say positive commandments, shazman grama, that are dependent on a particular moment of time. Women are relieved of that. They are exempt. It's not because men are infinitely more capable of shaking a lulav and an eser than a woman. Women, you understand, it takes tremendous intelligence. It takes being a male in order to shake a lulav and eser. There's a great deal of intellect and power and strength that's required to fulfill the mitzvah of sitting in a sukkah. Women, of course, are just incapable of sitting in a sukkah. Torah never meant that. What Torah was saying is, mitzvahs that are dependent on a particular moment in time, a woman's time is not as free as the time of a man. She has a responsibility to family that goes beyond the responsibility of the husband. I understand that the people on this side like that a little better than the people on that side. Alright, that's the fact. And the servant also, his time is not his own. And because his time is not his own, therefore he's relieved of those mitzvahs. But the point that I really want to make is that when a non-Jew sells himself as a slave, he has to understand in advance that he is making a religious commitment. It's not that I'm just selling myself into slavery. Beautiful Gemara. Torah says that you're not allowed to free the slave. So it says once Rabbi Gamliel was in shul with his servant Tevi, and there were only nine Jews plus Tevi. So the Gemara says that Rabbi Gamliel went ahead and he freed Tevi. So now you know what happens when you free him. Since he has already begun a process of conversion when he became a servant, by freeing him, he becomes a full-fledged Jew, and now he can count for a minion. So there they had a minion. And the Gemara says, mitzvah the rabbim, when it's a mitzvah that involves community, sure, you're allowed to do it. The point really that I want to make is that there's no relationship whatsoever between the idea of slavery as we know it in the world even today and the servitude that Torah was talking about. The halacha tells us, let's take a look at these psukim because there's something that we're going to come up against in Parshas Mishpatim that is now going to stay with us until the end of Torah, even more than in the previous Parshiot in Torah. There isn't a pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim that you can understand without Torah Sheba'al Peh, without the oral law. And Rashi over here, of course, is the one that's going to give us the oral law. Not a single pasuk is comprehensible without Torah Sheba'al Peh. Ki tikne eved ivri. Again, let's take the first pasuk. Ki tikne eved ivri. When you purchase a Hebrew slave, what does eved ivri mean? Does Eved Ivri mean a slave who is a Hebrew or the slave of a Hebrew? He's a non-Jew. How do we know what it means? Rashi says it. Ki tikne Eved Ivri, says Rashi, Eved Shahu Ivri, a slave, a servant, who is a Hebrew. O Eino Ela, maybe it means Avdo Shel Ivri, maybe it means a non-Jew who is the servant of a Hebrew, Eved Kenani, Shalakachato Miyisrael, an Eved Kenani whom you purchased from a Jew. Va'olavu Omer, and it's about this non-Jew, former non-Jew, who now is the servant of a Jew, about him it says, Sheishonim Yavol, he should work for 6 years. Umani Mekayim, and how am I going to fulfill the passage that says by an Eved Kenani, a non-Jewish servant, V'is nachaltem alsam, you should pass them on as an inheritance to your children. B'lokuach menaknanim, if you purchase him from a non-Jew. Avo b'lokuach miYisrael, but if you purchase a non-Jew from a Jewish master, Yetzei B'sheish, he goes out at the end of 6 years. Talmud Lama. So the Rashi says there's another parasha for that matter. There are another two parashas that talk about servants. One is in Parashat Bechukosa at the Har, and then there's going to be another one in Sefer Devarim. There it says, "Ki achicha ha'ivri o ha'ivriya." If your brother, the Hebrew, is going to sell himself to you, he works for you for 6 years. It's not important that you should remember everything. No, you should remember everything I'm saying. But the point that I want to make is, number one, no way to understand the halakhot that are being told to us in this parasha without knowing the rest of Torah. You have to know other parashiyot in Torah before you can understand what's going on here. That's number one. Number two, even when you know other parashiyot in Torah, you're going to need the Torah Sheba'al Peh. Without the Torah Sheba'al Peh, you're not going to be able to understand a word here. Which may at some point later on in the shir explain to us the reason why, one of the reasons why this is the first halacha that's being told to Klal Yisrael. Let's just read another few psukim. Im bekapo yavo bekapo yetzei, if he comes in alone, he goes out alone. Coming in alone means if he's purchased and he's not married. He's not married, then he comes in alone, he goes out alone. Im bal ishahu, if he is married, v'yotza ishto imo, his wife goes out with him. So Rashi of course makes the comment, wait a minute, whoever brought her into the house of the master? The master purchased him. So you know what we learn from this? We learn from this that when a master purchases a married servant, he becomes responsible for the whole family, the whole shooting match, the wife and the children. You understand what we're talking about? I mean, is this the kind of slavery we know of in the world? And therefore, if the master purchases a Hebrew slave who is married, his wife becomes part of the household, his children become part of the household, it's going to be a levity gevelt over there. And the master is responsible for them all. Rashi also points out to us that there are two possibilities for a Jew to be purchased or to be sold. One is, if a Jew has stolen and he doesn't have money to pay, Bezdin sells him into servitude. By the way, that's also something that can't happen terribly often, because the Gemara describes that the halacha says only if his value as a servant for 6 years equals the theft. If it doesn't equal the theft, you can't. I mean, how often do you think somebody's going to steal precisely what he's worth for 6 years of servitude? Then again, you may even ask the question, what are you talking about? Somebody's going to purchase as a servant and bring into his house a fellow who under other circumstances would be an ex-con. I mean, it's a ganav. Your kids are going to bring a ganav into the house. So in general, there you have to understand that Torah's approach was a completely different one. To imprison or incarcerate somebody, unheard of in Torah legislation. Rare instances that a person, personal freedom is taken away. Do you know what the halacha is really talking about? You know what this fellow who stole, you know what he needs? Number one, he needs a roof. He needs a good home. You know what the master becomes for him? A foster home for a fellow who unfortunately went astray. This master is a kiru fellow. That's what he is, according to Torah. That's what he's doing. He's being a karva. He's taking this ganef into his house and he's going to make a mensch out of him. By the time he goes out at the end of 6 years, this is going to be a completely different person. Can you imagine this kind of a halacha? I mean, any other place in the world, you understand, in New York, ganavim are going to be are going to be sold into servitude. Who would buy a New York ganef? If his master gives him a wife, the older lo bonam abonas, and she's going to give birth to sons or daughters, here is a unique halacha. The master does have a right to give him a shifcha k'danis, a non-Jewish maidservant. I shouldn't say non-Jewish. I take it back. Shifcha k'danis, because if she has been purchased, she has also begun the process of conversion. She has to be mekabel upon herself. He has to accept upon himself the yoke of mitzvahs. So if the master gives him a wife and she gives birth to sons or daughters, the wife and the children belong to the master. He goes out alone. And he knows that in advance. He knows that in advance. She's not going to go out with him.
And if the servant is going to say, I love my master, as ishti, as bonai, my wife and my sons, lo eitzei chavshi, I'm not going to go out free.
V'higisho adonav el ha'elohim, his master is supposed to bring him before Elohim over him, means bedin.
V'higisho al adelos al mezuzah, you take him to the door or to the doorpost. V'rotzo adonav es osne b'marzeah,
the master bores a hole through his ear v'avodol olam, and he is his servant forever. Rashi explains, again from Torah Sheba'al Peh, la'olam doesn't really mean forever. La'olam means until Yovel. It means that there's only 5 years until Yovel, the la'olam means another 5 years. It's just 1 year to Yovel.
We wouldn't understand a word, really, without Torah Sheba'al Peh, without the oral law.
Alright. If so, therefore, let's take a number of steps over here. The overriding question that we're asking is, why is this the first legislation? Couldn't the Rebbeim have chosen something more relevant to Jews than servitude? This is totally irrelevant. They're not going to have anything to do with this for many years to come. So there's an interesting approach that is taken by Rav Shamshin with Ol Hirsch. And I believe that what he's saying is the following. Maybe I'll even read a few choice sentences from Rav Shamshin with Ol Hirsch. He asks the question that we're talking about, that here is supposed to be the beginning of Judaism's civil code that outlines the rights of individuals. But with what do these laws begin? With laws applicable if a man sells another man, and if a man sells his own daughter as a slave. These are his words that I'm going to read now. What an unthinkable monstrosity this would be if this document would be indeed the sole book of law for the Jewish people. If Torah Shebichtav, if the written law is the sole source of Jewish law, it would be a monstrosity. He says, I don't know how you say it in German, but I imagine monstrosity is the correct translation for whatever he wrote in German. Monstrosity begins with this kind of law. It's an exceptional, unusual, and he even uses the term a bizarre law. Bizarre law. So what Rav Shamshon Feuerl Hirsch says is the following. He says, for 40 years in the desert, they learned Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu gives them the written, the Torah Shebichtav. He gives them at the end of the 40 years in the desert. Do you understand? When Klal Yisrael gets a Sefer Torah in their hands, they know all of the halachas already. Do you think this is the written Torah is their first exposure to Torah? They've been sitting in the greatest kollel of all for 40 years. Gam's Klal Yisrael. All of them have been studying Torah. At the end of the 40 years, they're given the document, the written law. They know it all. And by the way, when they come to Ki Tikna Eved Ivri, they don't have any questions. They don't need Rashi. They know already exactly what every one of the halachas means. This is not their first exposure or their first contact with Jewish law. They know it all. They know it all. In fact, there are two opinions. One opinion says that Torah was given in individual documents during the course of the 40 years. By the end of the 40 years, they had an entire Sefer Torah. There's another opinion that says that they were given an entire Sefer Torah only at the end of the 40 years. It appears in this Sedra itself, at the end of the Sedra, at the end of Parshas Mishpatim, or toward the end, in chapter Chav Dalet, and this is going to be an important pasuk. Every pasuk is an important pasuk, but for our present discussion, this is an important pasuk. Perek Chav Dalet, 24, pasuk Zayin, Vayikach Sefer HaBris. Moshe Rabbeinu took the book of the covenant.
Vayikra ba'aznei o'am, and he read it in the ears of the people. Vayomru, and they said, the famous, the greatest statement of Jewish history. Klal Yisrael said, Kol Asher Dibar Hashem, everything that God has said, Na'aseh v'nishma, we're going to do what we're going to hear. What sefer is Moshe reading to them? Says Rashi. You know what sefer he's reading to them? And more than that, in Pasuk Dalet before, it says, Vayichtov Moshe kol divrei Hashem. Moshe wrote all the words of God. What did Moshe read? Write? Says Rashi, Mi Bereshis ad Matan Torah. He wrote Torah from Bereshis till the middle of Yisro. He also wrote for them the mitzvahs that were given to them in Mara. He gave them part of the Sefer Torah. That's the Sefer HaBriz. It means, therefore, the Torah was given piecemeal. When they received Parshas Mishpatim, they already knew all of the halachas of Mishpatim backwards and forwards. What Rav Shamshon of Paul Hirsch is really saying is, the really significant Torah was the oral law. What was the purpose of the written law? The Sefer Torah, you know what its purpose was? In order to remember, in order to recoil, to recall. And he gives his great example. It says, Mashal Amah HaDavadoma. A student who's taking a course in university. A very highly technical kind of course. And or anything of that matter. It's philosophy, it's psychology, it's computers, whatever he's taking. And he takes notes. You know how we take notes. You know how we take notes. The professor is going to use certain terminology. Every discipline has its own terminology. There are terms, expressions that I use. I don't know, I only took courses in education. I'm even embarrassed to say what were the terms that I had to learn, because I'm going to be dating myself into prehistoric times. Most probably today there are all sorts of completely different terms. I mean, I was talking about I had to learn about a homogeneous grouping and heterogeneous grouping and felt needs and nicht felt needs and enrichment. These terms almost probably are so passé, have gone. Now it's mainlining, streamlining, mainstreaming. Oh, but mainlining, they do that in school too, don't they? Yeah? All right? So I wasn't so wrong. Mainstreaming and you know, I learned all of this terminology, by the way. It stood me in very good stead when I had to start a yeshiva and I had to impress in Toronto, and I had to impress the local members of the Board of Education. I was able to throw around the jargon with the best of them. I wouldn't try it today because I've dated myself. So then in the field of psychology and sociology, every field has its terminology, its language. And one of the first things you have to learn is you have to learn the language. Professor is giving a lecture, so you learn the language. He's going to use certain terms, but he's going to define his terms. That was always important, you know, the first thing they taught in college, define your terms. So he defines his terms. And then there are certain things that the professor is going to stress. So when he stresses something, you underline it a few times, you write a few exclamation marks. In the middle, you know, you may even start some kishkushim over there that have some that are related somehow or other to the lecture. And then, after the lecture is over, a friend who wasn't at the lecture says, can I use your notes? I missed the lecture, can I use your notes? So you know what you say? Crazy? I'd gladly lend you my notes. You wouldn't understand a word. You wouldn't understand a word. Who understands what I wrote? I understand it. Because I know what the terms mean. I heard the lecture. When there's an exclamation mark, I know what the exclamation mark. When I wrote a question mark, I know what that means. I have all sorts of marks. I have all sorts of things I've written over there. Says that Shamshon of Paul Hirsch, these are the notes with which to recall all of the Torah Shabbat there that was given to the Jewish people. You know who's going to understand this? Somebody was at the lecture. You learned by Moshe Rabbeinu and by Yoshua for 40 years. And then you take out Ki Tikna Eved Ivri, if you purchase an Eved Ivri. What are you talking about? You don't have any question what an Eved Ivri is. You know exactly what it means. Sure, an Eved Ivri is an Eved who is a Jew. He worked 6 years. I mean, all of the other halachas, all of these halachas, they were known. The Jew
who read the Sefer Torah when it was given to him had absolutely no doubts, no questions, there was no confusion. He knew exactly what it meant because he knew Kol HaTorah Kula. He knew it all. And these are the notes. These are the notes that were given. What really emerges from the words of Rav Shamshon Feuerle Hirsch is that the Iker Torah, the main Torah, was the Torah Shebi, Sheba'al Peh, the oral law. It was the oral law. Which may also mean that Ki Tikna Eved Ivri was not the first thing that they were taught. They were taught all of Torah. When they are finally given the written law, then Ki Tikna Eved Ivri appears first. So in other words, we don't have the great question anymore, the monstrosity of having this bizarre halach as first halach. It's not halach. It's not the first halach. But there's a great deal more there. I found in a sefer that was recently published, was written, I think posthumously, was written by Rav Shlomo Goren, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, makes a very, very interesting comment. It's more than a comment. Ve'ele ha'mishpatim asher tosim lifneihem. These are the judgments that you shall place before them. So Rashi, of course, is troubled by the question that he's also going to deal with. It should have said asher tilamdein, that you will teach them. Asher tomar lehem, that you will say to them. What do you mean that you should place before them? Says Rashi. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe, lo tale al datcho lomar, let it not occur to you to say, eshna lehem haperek v'ha aloch, I'm going to teach them this chapter or this halacha twice, shnayim or shlosh opamim, twice or three times, achet tehes tedura b'feim, until they're able to say the halacha back, kimish nosa, as I taught it to them, ve'eni torei achatzmi, I'm not going to trouble myself, la'avinam tamei adavet, to explain to them the inner meaning of it all, upei rusho in its commentary. Now don't think that. Lekach nema, therefore it says, asher tasim lefneim, you should place it before them, kishulchon ha'oruch, like a table that's set, umuchon lefnei ha'odam, it's prepared and it's there before men, so they should be able to eat. You can't simply just teach them the halachas by rote. Tasim lefneim means a great deal more than talamdein, teach them, or tomar lehem, or say to them. Tasim lefneim means you have to make certain that they understand the full depth of the halach. Rav Goren says, let's take a look where else the word tasim or sim or sima, this word is used in Torah with regard to Torah, with respect to Torah. I made that qualification because somebody is going to tell me, listen, it says Som Tasim Olecha Melech, place upon yourself a king. You're going to bring me all sorts of other psalms. I'm not talking about all of them. I'm talking about those that are related to Torah. So one of them we spoke about 2 weeks ago, the Shir was about one of them. 3 days after Klal Yisrael emerges from the Yamsuf, they come to Marah, and the waters are bitter. Sham Samlo Chalku Mishpat Visham Yisrael. 3 days they're going in the Midbar, they have no water. Klal Yisrael complains, they finally come to Marah, the waters are bitter. Moshe shows them a piece of wood, throws it into the water becomes sweet. Sham Samlo. There he placed before him Chok Umishvat, statute and law. And you remember, we talked at great length about that passage. But Rashi says, what does Sham Samlo, Chok Umishvat, the Sham Yisrael mean? Moshe taught them Miktsav Dinim of Torah, some of the laws of Torah. And there are different opinions. Rashi brings that he taught them the parasha of Parah Aduma. He taught them the Shabbos was given to them in Marah. Dinim, the Dinim Bein Adam Lachavera. There is another Gemara that says that they learned Kibud Aveim. They learned at Marah the seven mitzvahs Bnei Noach. How did they learn all of that? Were they given anything in writing? No, they weren't given anything in writing. Shom Samlo, he placed before them. Do you know what it means? Samlo must mean orally, verbally. Now this idea is going to become even more clear to us when you go from the middle of Parshas Bechukos, Bishalach, until the end of Bishalach. at the end of Bishalach, the famous pasuk, after Milchemes Amalek, Master in Bishalach, what does the Rebbein Shem say? Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Hashem said to Moshe, Ksov Zos Zikaron Basefer, write this to be remembered in a book, the Simba Ozne Yehoshua, and place it in the ears of Yehoshua. Ki Mocho Emche Zecher Amalek, I'm going to destroy the memory of Amalek, Mitachat Hashemayim, from beneath the heavens. Do you hear what it says? Ksozo Zikoron Basefer, write it in a book. But that's not enough. In addition to writing in a book, Simba Ozne Yehoshua. So what does Simba Ozne Yehoshua, place it in the ears of Yehoshua, what must that mean? Orally, verbally. A third place in Torah. At the end of Parshas Hazinu, it says, one of the last mitzvahs in Torah, Va'ata, Kisvu lachem es hashira hazos. Write this song. V'lamda es b'nei Yisrael. Teach it to the children of Israel. Sima b'fihem. Place it in their mouths. So first it says, write it. Then it says, teach it. And then it says, Sim al Bethihem. So Rav Goren says, you know what the word Sim means? In all of these, in these three psukim that deal with Torah, Sima or Lasum means Torah Sheba'al Peh. Ve'ela ha-mishpatim ha-shetasim lefneim, the fourth pasuk. Ve'ela ha-mishpatim, these are the judgments ha-shetasim lefneim that you shall place before them. What's being established over here is the idea that you're not going to be able to make your way through Torah Shebichtav without Torah Shebaalpeh, without the oral law. This is terribly important, because there are, of course, those in Judaism who say, well, there is the written law, there's the Bible, and then there's rabbinic law. You understand? You have nobody to blame something for, you can always blame the rabbis. Which, of course, for example, in conservative or reformed Judaism, well, the oral law is rabbinic law. And if it's rabbinic law, they were rabbis and we're rabbis. Understand? We're also rabbis. We're also rabbis. What I'm talking about is, even those who say, yes, there was an oral law, there was a Torah Shabbat Peh, but the Torah Shabbat Peh was rabbinic interpretation. They were rabbis and we're rabbis. So you have to understand that's not the meaning of Torah Shabbat Peh. Shtei Toros, the Gemara says, two Torahs were given to Klal Yisrael. They were given simultaneously. Torah Shebichtav, Torah Shebaalpeh. According to Rosh Hashanah, before Hirsch, it comes out, and Mosali, he's right, in a sense, simultaneous, but the fact is that Torah Shebaalpeh was given before Torah Shebichtav. So that when a Jew opened up a Chumash, he knew exactly what it said. So Rav Goren is now deepening this by saying, Eila Mishpatim Asher Tosin Lisnayim. Tosin means, what does Tosin mean? From all the psukim, it means something that they are taught orally, they are taught verbally. Because that's the real way in which to transmit Torah. The written law, one can always find an interpretation of something written. You can always find some kind of interpretation. One will say this, one will say that. You needed the oral law, you needed the Torah Shabbi Bial Peh in order to understand it. I'm leading up to something. There are a number of midrashim. I want to read two of them. There are a number of midrashim that deal with the question of why bore the man a hole in the man's ear. The servant who says, "I love my master, my wife, and my children. I don't want to go out free." Oh, very good. But there are a number of different texts. I want to give you two of them. Very good. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai Hoyodoresh. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai used to preach. Manishtana ozen mikol evarim shebaguf. Why is the ear different than all other organs of the body? Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu said the Rabbeinu Shalom. Ozen sheshom al Har Sinai, the ear that heard at Har Sinai b'shal shalmarti, at the time that I said, Ki li b'nei Yisrael avadim, the children of Israel servants unto me. V'lo avadim l'avadim, which means they should not be servants to other servants. V'holach zevet hanadim le'atzmo. This fellow went and he purchased a master for himself. Yiratza, let his ear be bored. He didn't hear well what was being said at Har Sinai. Ozen zu, this ear that heard, ki li b'nei Yisrael avadim. Children of Israel are my servants. This is a Gemara in Kedushin. In Talmud Bavli Kedushin. The Yerushalmi of Kedushin says the following. Shalu ha-talmidim et Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. The students of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asked him, Ma ro ha-eved hazeh li-rotza b'yozno yote mikolei varat? Why is this servant ear being bored rather than any other organ of the body? I mean, there's a problem with this question that the students are asking Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Didn't they hear what the Rebbe, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, had preached to the public? Ozen zu, this ear that heard, ki li b'nei Yisrael avadim, Jews are my servants, and he went and found himself another master. So watch. Om Alehem, says Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai to them, Ozen sheshoma al Har Sinai, the ear that heard at Har Sinai, lo yihiyeh lecha elehim achedim al panai, there shall be no other gods before me. The ear that heard at Sinai, the second of the Ten Commandments, there shall be no other gods before me. V'holach zeh, this fellow went, ufarak me'olav ol malchus shemayim, he has cast off the heavenly yoke, the kibul olav ol bazel adam, and he accepted upon himself the yoke of men and flesh and blood. Yeiratza, let his ear be bored. So we have over here a problem. What did Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai really say? In the Talmud Bavli, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, listen, this ear that heard, ki li b'nei Yisrael avodim, and he went and purchased a master for himself, let his ear be bored. What does he say in Talmud Yerushalmi? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is saying to his students, the ear that heard, lo yiyeh lecha elehim achedim al panai, there shall be no other gods before you, went ahead and he got himself a new master. He has removed the heavenly yoke from himself. Obviously, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is not contradicting himself. If anything, these two statements of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, they complement one another. They complete one another. The second deepens the idea that was expressed by the first. And I'll tell you, the whole day I've been wondering, why is there this sort of machloket between Talmud Bavli and Talmud Yerushalmi? Talmud Bavli is giving us one statement, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Talmud Yerushalmi is giving us the other. From what we're going to say, it's going to emerge that Talmud Yerushalmi is deepening, taking a profounder look at this person who has who wants to stay with his master. It may very well fit in with the Shita. Rav Kook has a Shita in many it's probably one of the things that should be a topic for us here in and of itself. Many sources in the writings of Rav Kook where he says about the question that we have, everybody learns Talmud Bavli. Not many people learn Talmud Yerushalmi. Talmud Yerushalmi is a great deal more difficult to learn than Talmud Bavli. Daf Yomi deals with Talmud Bavli until I think it was Ger or somebody else that came along and has a Daf Yomi of Talmud Yerushalmi. Talmud Yerushalmi was always more difficult, and certainly fewer people knew Talmud Yerushalmi. I remember one of the jokes that I heard as a kid, you know, if you wanted to quote something and nobody should be able to question you about the veracity and truthfulness of the quote, you say, well, it's Yerushalmi. Because nobody knew Yerushalmi. You could make up whatever you wanted and say it's a Yerushalmi. All right. Rav Kook has a very fascinating approach. He says Talmud Yerushalmi is more difficult because Talmud Yerushalmi is infinitely more profound than Talmud Bavli. I mean, I'm saying this now as I'm thinking of it. I'm making it up as I'm going along. And I say that this is something that Rav Kook deepens the idea that Talmud Yerushalmi is not as easily understood as Talmud Bavli, because Talmud Yerushalmi was more profound than Talmud Bavli. I mean, obviously he's working on the basis that Avira de Eretz Yisrael Nachim, the heir of Eretz Yisrael, makes people wise, that there was a wisdom in Eretz Yisrael that didn't appear in Babel. For that matter, the Gemara, and I recall a Gemara that says, the Mistarim
in concealment and in darkness. The Gemara says that Talmud Shel Bavel is Talmud of Bavel. I think common wisdom has always been that Talmud Yerushalmi was never as good as Talmud Bavli, because in Bavel Jews had 1,000 years of relative peace and quiet and tranquility, so they were able to write a great Talmud. But Eretz Yisrael was always the scene of strife and war and conflict. So therefore, sort of Talmud Yerushalmi is not as good as Talmud Bavli. Rav Kook takes a completely different position, completely the opposite. On the contrary, it's more deep. In these two statements of Reuven ben Zakkai, I think we can find proof to what Rav Kook was saying. Because take a look, the first statement of Rav Shimon ben Yochai said the following: that Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, I keep getting them mixed up. You people have to stay awake. We're talking about Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, the first statement says, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, Hoyododesh, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai used to preach. Which means this first statement was one that was for public consumption. The second statement of Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai was in response to a question that was asked by his students, Shalu HaTalmidim, the Talmidim, the students of Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. For public consumption, he said something that the public could easily understand. It says, Kili b'nei Yisrael avodim, the children of Israel are my servants. You're not servants to other servants. Why did you go purchase for yourself another master? When his students ask him, he knows that his students know what he has been preaching publicly. They obviously want to understand the deeper meaning of it all. So he says, do you know what servitude means? Servitude also carries within it the seeds of idolatry. Because the extent to which you commit yourself to another human being, to that extent you have diminished your ability to commit yourself to God. Lo yiyeh l'cholehim acherim al panai. If we're talking about terminology, is it social workers or psychologists who talk about the significant other? Right? Everybody has a significant other. What the Rebbe Shem is saying is the capital S, capital O, significant other in the Jew's life should be the Rebbe Shem. If you find a master for yourself, then you know what you're doing. You are bringing into your consciousness and into your life another significant other, and there isn't enough place for two significant others. So what Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai in the Talmud Yerushalmi is saying it's more. You didn't hear well. The ear is bored because the person hasn't heard well. Didn't hear what was said at Sinai. Didn't hear Kili b'nei Yisrael avadim. Didn't hear Lo yiyeh lecha elohim acherim al panai. Because hearing, there are all sorts of levels of hearing. One level of hearing is it goes in one ear and it goes out the other ear. That's somebody who hasn't heard altogether. There may have been a physical hearing, but there was no internal hearing at all. There are levels of hearing. There's the person who hears but has not internalized what he has heard. That happens to us very often. We hear something, we know either that something is good or something is bad, but it doesn't really have any effect upon our conduct. And then there's a deeper kind of hearing, and that deeper kind of hearing is when I hear something means that what I've heard is going to make a difference in my life. Isn't that what Klal Yisrael is saying at the end of Parshas Mishpatim? Kol Asher Diber Hashem, all that God has said, Na'aseh V'Nishma, we will do and we will hear. What do you mean we will do and we will hear? How do you know what to do if you haven't heard? You know what Na'aseh V'Nishma must mean? That we're going to hear it the first time in order to know what to do. And then we're going to hear Torah again and again and again.
Hain b'libeinu. What do we say in the bracha before Shema? V'tein b'libeinu bina. Given our hearts understanding, lahavim, to understand, lahatzil, to be intelligent about it. Lishmala, lil nodel lalamit. What do you mean, tein b'libeinu bina lahavim lahatzil, and lishmala comes after that? Shouldn't lishmala to hear come first? You know what kind of shmiya we're talking about? We're not talking about the shmiya that transmits information. We're talking about hearing. When you really internalize it. When Klal Yisrael said Nasa V'Nishma, it means we're going to hear it first in order that we should know what to do. But then we're going to keep hearing it again and again. There's no such thing as hearing it once. It has to become a lifetime. A lifetime of hearing. A lifetime of listening. There's a famous Beis Halevi, Rabbi Yosef Dov Halevi Salavetsik, at the side of the Rebbe, the great grandfather of the Rabbi Yosef Dov Halevi of this generation. So he says, the Gemara in the Sefer Shabbat says, when Klal Yisrael higdimu nasa l'nishma, when they said nasa we will do, even before they said nishma, 600,000 angels came down from heaven and placed two crowns upon the heads of each Jew. One crown was for Nasa and one was for Nishma. So he asks, what does it have to do with the fact that they said Nasa before Nishma? Why doesn't it simply say, because they said Nasa and Nishma, they got two crowns? But that's not what the Gemara says. The Gemara says, Bishar Shehigdimu, when they gave precedence, they said Nasa before Nishma. So he says the following. Because there are two dimensions to the study of Torah. There is the study of Torah in order to know what to do, and in that study of Torah, men and women are equal. They also have to know what to do. But beyond that, there is a second dimension of the mitzvah of Limud HaTorah, and that's Limud Torah, to study Torah Lishma. That's a responsibility upon men, not upon women. If they would have said Nishma v'na'aseh, we're going to hear and we're going to do, it would have meant that they are accepting them upon themselves only one dimension of the study of Torah. I'm going to hear in order to know what to do. But if they say Na'aseh before Nishma, how can you be Na'aseh? How can you do? How can you perform? What it means is, I've heard already what I have to do. And after I've heard what I have to do and I do it, I'm going to go back again and I'm going to listen again and I'm going to study again. I think that's the pshat. V'hoya im shamoa tishmu. Why doesn't it say v'hoya im tishmu? What do you mean shamoa tishmu? Real hearing means you have to hear, and then you have to hear again and again. Do you know what shmia means? Shmia means that you're hearing something verbal. Do you know why I think Eved Ivri is the first of the halakhas that Torah tells us? Because you know what we're learning in the parsha of Eved Ivri? You know what we're learning in this parsha? You have to be able to hear Sinai well. And the person who doesn't hear the message of Sinai well is the one who has to have his ear bored. Start hearing now. Eila ha-mishpatim ha-shetasim l'sneim. These are the laws that you place before them. What is all of Torah dependent upon? Not the written word. It's the Torah Shebaal Peh. Without the Torah Shebaal Peh, the Torah Shebaal would be incomprehensible. The first halacha that Torah is talking about is the halacha of hearing. You gotta hear, you gotta know how to internalize, you gotta know how to take that which you hear and make it part of your consciousness, make it part of your neshama. What would we do without Torah Shebaal Peh? Some of the classic examples, of course, are there is so much halacha about the mitzvah of shechita, ritual slaughtering. Do you know how much, what is said in Torah Shebichtav about that mitzvah? One word, vizavachta, and you shall slaughter. So what do you think? Moshe told them vizavachta, and 600,000 hands went up and said, Moshe, what's this Rizavachta business? No, that's not the way it happens. By the time the 40 years in the desert were up, they knew all the halakhas of Shita when they came to the Pasuk. They knew exactly what it meant. They didn't stop for a minute to think about it. Another classic example. On the first day of... on Sukkot, L'tachta lechem b'yom ha'rishon, you're supposed to take a 3-8 hadar. The fruit of a beautiful tree, the beautiful fruit of a tree, the beautiful tree with a beautiful fruit, something beautiful. What's it supposed to mean? What's it supposed to mean? You'll put 10 Jews in a room, and the 10 Jews will come up with 10 different beautiful fruits of beautiful trees. You think there was a doubt in any Jew's mind when he came to the pasuk that says that you should take a lulav and a 3-8 hadar? You think he had any doubt what it was? He thought it was a kiwi. You don't know what a kiwi is. It's a shoe polish, huh? There is a fruit kiwi. There is a fruit?
And a shoe polish.
There was no doubt in anybody's mind what the 3-8 hadar was, because Moshe Rabbeinu told them. We're talking about a Nazareth. When they came to 3-8 hadar, immediately they knew what it meant. It says in Torah, "Ukshartam la'os al yodecha." You should bind them for signs upon your hand, and ulatotafot beinecha, and frontlets between your eyes. I don't know what it means. I mean, there's a massive halacha on tefillin. What does it mean? Incomprehensible. There's no way in the world that anybody could have known what it meant. So how did they learn it? There's no problem. By the time they were given the written law, they knew already how to write tefillin, how to make tefillin. They were all wearing tefillin. And Shmuel Vohus was right. When they came to the pasuk of Chacham, Lo Tal Yedef, of Oyel, the Tosafot, being in Echad, they said, "What are you talking about? This is it. We learned already. Moshe told us." It means, therefore, that the foundation upon which all of Torah stands on Torah Shebaal Peh, on the oral law. And if it depends on the oral law, then you know what it means? It means you better be able to hear and to listen well. If you're not going to listen well, you're not going to understand. Therefore, ve'elah ha'mishpatim asher tasim lifneihem, these are the judgments that you should place before them. Sham sam lo chok u'mishpat. V'sim ba'oznei Yehoshua. Sima b'fihem. You have to be able to transmit Torah, you have to be able to transmit Torah Shebaal Peh. And therefore I say, Ki Tikna Eved Ivri is no longer such a bizarre halacha, neither is it a monstrosity to begin with that halacha. Because both at the beginning of the Sedra and at the end of the Sedra, you know what we're hearing? The importance of hearing. The fell at the beginning of the Sedra, Ozen Zusha Shomal Har Sinai, and what do we hear at the end of the Sedra? Nasa V'nishma. Klal Yisrael said that they understood what to hear. They understood what to hear. I just want to close with was that a signal to close? The heat went off at 9:03. 3:09. We'll speak to the authorities about this. Which means it wasn't too uncomfortable in shul tonight, was it? Huh? Huh? It was nice and cold in here. You were. No, it was pretty warm. There's nothing blowing over here. No. All right, it's very warm. It's very warm. I'm happy that the heat is off now. I just want to close with a. I may not do him justice, but I think it's at least important to say it. But the idea is very good. It's a very beautiful essay of Shmuz by Rav Chaim Shmulevitz of Mira Shiva. The Haftorah of Parshas Mishpatim. By the way, I was very careful in saying the Haftorah of Parshas Mishpatim. I didn't say this week's Haftorah, because somebody is going to jump up and say, it's Rosh Chodesh this week, we're not going to read it. Okay, so I'm one step ahead of you. I know that it's Rosh Chodesh. So I said the Haftorah for Parshas Mishpatim. The Haftorah for Rosh Chodesh is the Haftorah for Rosh Chodesh. So just remember, there is a Haftorah for Parshas Mishpatim. And the Haftorah for Parshas Mishpatim comes in Sefer Yirmiyahu. And we're told a terrible story there. It says that Jews, before the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash in the days of Tzidkiyahu, who was the last king of Yehuda, there were Jews who had enslaved their fellow Jews. And finally Tzidkiyahu brings all the Jews of Yerushalayim together, and they accept upon themselves the covenant that they're going to free their fellow Jews. And they send their fellow Jews out to freedom. And then, you know what? They turn around afterwards and they take back their slaves. And the Rebbein Shem says, because of this, you're going to be sent off into exile. And he says, Korati Brit Adavotechem, the Psukim in the Torah, I made a covenant with your fathers, Biyom Hotzi Otam Mi'eretz Mitzrayim, the day on which I took them out of Egypt, I made a covenant with them. I made a covenant with your fathers on the day that I took them out of Egypt and based upon them lay off from the house of slavery, so saying. At the end of 7 years, another when the seventh year begins, you're supposed to send your brother out to freedom. And you haven't done that. Because of that, you're going to be sent off into exile. The big question is, we don't know of any place in the Torah where it says that there was a covenant that God entered into with the Jewish people on the day that they went out of Egypt. What do you mean on the day that they went out of Egypt? Well, we don't know that they were taught any Torah on the day that they went out of Egypt. The first we hear of it is right now, Ki Tiknath Eved Ivri. Says Reb Chaim the following. In life, there are always moments of great inspiration. There are moments that certain thoughts overwhelm us, take hold of us. What happens with those moments of great inspiration? What happens with those good thoughts? One of two possibilities. One is that we act on the basis of the thought. We take the thought and we give it life and we make it concrete. We make it meaningful, and by virtue of the fact that we make it meaningful and we make it concrete and we give it life, what we're really doing is we're taking that inspiration and we're carrying it further. It's going to last a great deal longer. And then, of course, there's the other possibility that we don't ever act at the moment of great inspiration, and what happens with that great moment is it's dissipated and it disappears, and there goes an exceptional moment either in Jewish history or in our lives, and it was all a waste. And that's a terrible, terrible waste. It says the following. The day that Jews were marching out to freedom, and you would have asked the Jew in the street, what do you think about freedom? Can you imagine the feelings that overwhelmed for the first time in history of people who's marching out from slavery to freedom? Can you imagine the exhilaration, the feelings, indescribable, unimaginable? So what are you supposed to do with that kind of a feeling? You know what you're supposed to do with that kind of a feeling? Never, ever again. We will never enslave anybody. I'll never be a slave again. That's what the inspiration of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the least, is that. If centuries later, Jews are enslaving their fellow Jew, it means that the great moment of inspiration of Yetzias Mitzrayim was dissipated and lost. It was a waste. And if that's what happens, then you know what? The Mishnah has no choice. Talmud Yerushalmi says, it was because there were Jewish slaves in Yerushalayim that Kal Yisrael went into exile. You know what Yerushalayim is saying? If you haven't learned the lesson of the previous exile, you know what you're going to have to do? You're going to have to learn it all over again. We're going to have to start from the Aleph all over again. Go off, be taken off into slavery and exile and see how you like it. What are you going to do with that inspiration? The first halacha that is being told to Kal Yisrael, Ki Tikna Eved Ivri, you know why that's the first halacha? Not because it's a matter of whether it's relevant to me right now, whether I'm going to buy an Eved in the Midbar or I'm not going to buy an Eved in the Midbar. That's not the importance of the importance of an halacha. You know why this is the first halacha? This is the first halacha because this is the great message that you're supposed to take out from the whole Yitzchak and Tzayim. This is the first thing you have to learn. That moments of greatness has to be utilized. So some people will take a picture of it and send it. And it'll go into an album, or maybe not even get into an album. That's not what Torah wants you to do with with these moments of strong, strong positive feelings. You have to take the feelings and you have to make them work. You have to translate them into reality in real life. Yesterday when I said this year, I gave an example, and this is the example always. You know, there are moments in which you have a feeling, you know, I should call Uncle such and such. I haven't spoken to him in a long time. I should write a letter to Tante so and so. I haven't done it in a long time. I should do yeah. And then never, a few days later, you find out Uncle so and so just died, and you kick yourself. Why didn't I call him? Why didn't I speak to him? It would have meant so much then. Why didn't I just do what I thought I should do? Why didn't I write to Tante such and such? Why didn't I do it? So my wife, last night my wife hears me calling an uncle who lives in the States. He's 90 years old. So she said, "Oh boy, you listen to your shir today. You listen to your shir today." And I was so thrilled to talk with him. He was even more thrilled to hear from me. The halacha of kitikne eved ivri is not only the dry halacha of purchasing or selling slaves. It's more than that. It's the whole Mitzrayim experience. It's the whole Exodus experience. That's the covenant that I made with you on the day that you went out of Mitzrayim. You have a good thought? Do it! Do it. Don't let good feelings, don't let good ideas, don't let good intentions be lost, dissipate, disappear. You have to do something. You have to do something. In order to do, you have to be able to hear. You have to be able to hear. You have to be responsive to the needs of people. Okay.